Hi, Flora, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good, you know.
This is Jim Gorman. He's a science reporter at the New York Times, and he's this guy that I really look up to. He's kind of an inspiration to me.
I write about bugs, and I just talked to one of the world's the most interesting fly person. Well, no, I've talked to so many interesting fly people, it's hard to say.
Hard to choose.
Yes.
So I called my personal Obi-Wan Kenobi of science reporting because I heard some hot bug gossip.
We publish species descriptions all the time. Nobody gives a shit about that, but
there is drama in the bug world. And the moment I heard it, I knew I had to tell Jim. I felt certain that if there's anyone who would be as delighted as I am to learn the latest bug world gossip, it would be Jim.
I'm flattered.
Okay. So I was at the Entomological Society of America conference. 3,600 bug people, scientists, collectors, enthusiasts.
Uh-huh.
And this thing that I have to tell you, it happened at the Beetle Society table. Because there are people in this world who love beetles so much that they will pay dues to be part of a beetle society. Like this beetle collector that I met there, Jeff Uther.
One day I just thought I'd like to collect beetles about 40 years ago, and I started, and now I go mainly to the southwestern U.S. two or three times a year, spend a week or two collecting, especially in my own favorite group, which are blister beetles or oil beetles.
Are those the ones that they emit something and it will cause blisters?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
They're medium sized. Some are fairly large, but a lot of them are very gaudily colored, and probably a few of them you could say were oh my beetles.
I love this so much. An oh my beetle is like basically a very fancy beetle.
You know, my specimens are any big insect that may be a gaudy color, really large, have horns, huge antenna. And when you look at it, you say, oh my, look at that.
That's great. That's like the good Lord bird, the ivory-billed woodpecker, you know, called the good Lord because people would look at it and say, good Lord.
Oh, I love that. So how do you know if you've got an oh my beetle on your hands?
It's probably just in the eye of the beholder.
That's great.
The whole tone of the conference was like this. It was like people admiring bugs, people admiring unbeloved bugs. Every bug is beautiful. Beetle beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Like very sweet.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It's about my favorite kind of thing.
Until I mentioned the word butterfly.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody likes butterflies. But some of us beetle people really don't, because the lepidopters or people who work on Mars butterflies kind of think they're in a different echelon than anybody else.
There's a beetle butterfly beef.
Really?
It's always been that way, ever since I've been a kid, that people with butterflies and moths are sort of up here, and all of us are a step or two below them.
I had no idea.
I wondered if you had heard about it in the course of your reporting.
No. Is this shared by the butterfly people? Or is it like the Mets and the Yankees, where the Mets fans hate the Yankees and the Yankees fans don't care?
I can answer that. Here's Dan Rubinoff, moth researcher, lepidopterist, on this controversy.
They're jealous of our beauty. It's just so obvious. Yeah. And they try to make these little crappy things they work on look beautiful, or they tell us they're beautiful, and they know they're not. And that's the source of the conflict, really. The basest moth outbraves the dignity of the average beetle.
But can you believe this?
Yeah. So it is both sides. And the burns cut even deeper than that. Here's beetle researcher Ainsley Seago.
Leps are the worst. Like, oh, you're something that gets like tattooed on a 19-year-old. That's great. Oh, look at your dusty wings and your curly proboscis. Well, guess what?
This is so sad. This is so sad. I mean, maybe they really are joking, right? I mean, you can't have people fighting over butterflies and beetles, which are better.
I know, but I asked this. I can't tell if anyone's joking.
Joking? We don't do that. We're scientists, right?
I can't tell you. This really is really upsetting to me. It's like...
Say more.
I mean, This is the most depressing news.
Needless to say, this was not the reaction I was going for.
This is supposed to be, you know, the thing that takes people's minds off awful stuff. You know, let's talk about how cool beetles are. Nah, they're not so cool. Let's talk about how beautiful butterflies are. Lousy leps.
Okay, so you know that feeling you get when the buddy you wanted to share your trashy gossip with turns out to be a better person than you and doesn't take any pleasure at all in the petty drama of others.
It's so disturbing. I mean, that's not why I want to go to the entomologist meeting, right?
Well, why would you go?
Well, I would go to see all the cool bugs and just hear about all the cool stories.
I realized I had to turn this around. I think we can reframe this slightly. I don't think this has to be so distressing, because I think their main point wasn't like butterflies suck. I think it was like, don't overlook the beetle.
Okay.
So I have some cool beetle facts for you.
Break my heart and then give me a few little
morsels.
Yeah.
Beetles do all these amazing things. They go everywhere. They do everything. They do things that butterflies can't.
This is beetle researcher Ainsley again, and she's going to give us three amazing beetle facts. And when I think beetle, I think of like brown, nondescript bug. But some species are truly bizarre. Like, think Ridley Scott alien level weird.
Like the shootout mouth parts with a little grabber on the end. There's a kind of springtail eating rove beetle called Stenas that has these spring-loaded mouth parts that have little grabbers on the end that they shoot out from its mouth to grab these little tiny springtails.
Now we're talking. That's what I love to hear about. That's what I would go to the meeting for.
All right, well, how about this one? How about this one?
Wheel-like locomotion has evolved in tiger beetle larvae. There are tiger beetle larvae that live on beaches where it's super windy. And if they are threatened and they're exposed on the sand and they can't get into their tunnel, they roll up into a perfect circle and wheel away, blown by the wind.
Beetles invented the wheel?
Apparently so.
That's incredible. There's your headline.
There's one more thing. Beetles also have, like, a little bit of a John Wayne streak. The biological term is that they're phoretic, which is a word I'd never heard before. Have you heard that word?
No.
Phoresy is the best thing in all of biology. Phoresy, P-H-O-R-E-S-Y, refers to the practice of riding around on something else like a little cowboy. There are beetles, specifically in the family that I study, that ride around on shrews. Shrews are the most savage, ravenous insectivores of all the mammals. They are ferocious. They have to eat their own body weight at least in insects per day, and these beetles are riding around on them, which is insane.
That's beetles riding around on shrews? Shrews, they're like, it's just like she said, and beetles riding around on them? That's great. That, and I had no idea.
So do you still feel shaken and depressed by this fact, buddy?
No, I feel much better now. Once I heard about the beetles riding shrews, that kind of made my day. Now I'm happy. That'll last, you know, several hours. In fact, I'm going to go look. As soon as we finish, I'm going to go look for video of those wheelie beetles.
Yes. I'll send you the name.
Okay.
It's the coastal tiger beetle, and if you want to see it wheeling away, check out our Facebook page or Twitter account. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for sharing the facts with me. I'll be your fact buddy anytime.
After the break, a question from the ELT helpline. Are you or are you not being watched by planes in the sky? We'll find out. Hi, still me. As you know, we have a factual answering service.
Thank you for calling the Every Little Thing Helpline.
347-464-9626. Call us anytime. It's open 24/7, and no question will be turned away.
After the tone, please leave a detailed description of your question.
Or leave us feedback, like Fred.
Hey, this is Fred from Philly.
Fred from Philly has an excellent bonus fact to share. It relates to an episode we did on armadillos.
Listen, I heard your thing on armadillos this morning. Very interesting, but you forgot to mention one important fact. They are spreaders of leprosy. Yeah, check it out. The only, besides humans, they're the only other one that spreads leprosy. Anyway, thought I'd let you know that. Talk to you later. Bye.
Fred, I want to thank you for this message, because you are completely right, and other people tweeted about it too. It is true, armadillos do carry leprosy. But not to worry, armadillo fans, it is also difficult to get leprosy from an armadillo.
You know, I've been working with them for however long.
30 years. That's how long biologist Colleen McDonough has been working with them.
And I've, you know, caught and held thousands of them, and knock on wood, I haven't gotten leprosy. So it's a pretty difficult disease to contract. The lore is, at least when I was working in South America, they said, well, people who get leprosy, they're the ones hunting, killing, cleaning, and eating the armadillos.
So to be safe, avoid armadillo cuisine. Speaking of armadillo cuisine, it exists.
They used to be called Hoover hogs. So that was during the Depression. People probably were trying to get any kind of protein meat.
Today, you can find recipes for baked armadillos, barbecued armadillos, and biologist Colleen once had a very close encounter with an armadillo stew.
I've eaten a lot of game meat. I'm not squeamish. But that stew did not smell real good. I think it was a very old male. And eventually I said, fine. I'll try it. And I looked in the stew pot and saw this little claw.
No.
Armadillo claw. And I'm like, no, that's too familiar. You know, if it just looked like a chicken leg, I'd be fine. But no. So I never tasted it.
So there you go, Fred from Philly. Yes, they do carry leprosy. It's hard to contract, and armadillos make a questionable stew. Speaking of questions, let's get to one.
Hey, my name is Will Passy. I had a question. I drive through the Columbia Gorge on my way home up to Seattle, and they often have signs that say this area is patrolled by aircraft. And I was wondering, like, how often do they catch people? How even do they really patrol by aircraft? So I'd like some help with that.
Okay. We have a very special listener mail today. Listener Will Passy has seen road signs in Oregon that say speed limit enforced by aircraft. Maybe you have seen them too. They are all over the country. And listener Will wants to know, reasonably, are aircrafts actually enforcing the speed limit?
You begin to wonder, like you start looking up and I don't see anything in the sky.
And here's the special part.
Hello.
We found the Oregon State Police pilot who flies over this exact area.
Yes.
Andrew, should I call you Pilot Menlo? Pilot Andrew? What's the best way to...
Captain Andy. Just kidding. No, just Andrew's fine.
So we are about to give Will the surprise of his life. Day. The surprise of his day. Because we're going to call listener Will Passy with Captain Andy secretly on the line.
Okay.
All right, we're going to put you on mute, and then we'll reveal you about halfway through.
All right.
Okay, let's call Will. Hey, Will.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Great. Okay, so you've seen these speed limit patrolled by aircraft signs, and basically you're wondering if they're a lie. And do you have a theory or like a mental picture of what is going on up in the air?
So I like to picture that you have this prop plane, you know, like a, you can picture like a crop duster, like the pilot is sitting up front, and it's open air cockpit. And, you know, you got a guy, another cop sitting behind with a radar gun, like they're flying over, pointing the radar gun at the cars driving past.
How do you imagine the pilot?
So you picture, you know, this pilot who's this grizzled old farmer who's just, you know, he wants to help his community. And so we might as well, you know, take some of the police officers up there and slow people down on that road.
So you think of him as like, you know, he's like kind of a Western cowboy type.
Yeah. Yeah. Grizzled old Western cowboy.
Like a rough rider, like a man, a few words kind of thing, or.
Yeah. Because this is an open air cockpit, you know, it's hard for them to communicate, you know, like their arms are hanging out of the cockpit and they're just like pounding on the side of the plane to get each other's attention and pointing down and just a lot of pounding and grunts.
Pounding and grunts. Okay. Are you ready to find out?
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm just a simple farmer. Can't hear very well. I just got this cell phone because I live out in the sticks. Hey, it's me. None of those things are true.
What?
Will, meet pilot Andrew Menlo, the very police pilot who flies over the area where you see the signs.
Hey, Will.
Andrew, you're breaking my heart. You're not some grizzled old guy.
Nope.
Just out there to help
nope.
The police.
Not that I'm aware of. So that's a character I'll have to refine, though, perhaps.
But how much grunting?
A lot of grunting, you know, because we just got out of the hot air balloon phase, and now we're in these open cockpit biplanes. So we're just tapping each other on our leather helmets and pointing, and then yeah, we've got the guy in the calculator.
Will, you nailed it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, Will, here it is. This is your chance.
Okay, so I guess the main question I have is, how is it that you're actually patrolling the air?
Okay, let me preface this with all, we don't even do that anymore. But when we did, we would paint marks on the highway, and they'd do either a quarter mile or a half mile intervals. And what you would do is, you would just time with a certified stopwatch the time it took you to get to each line. It's pretty simple.
The time it took the driver?
Yeah, the car. And that's what you do. You'd follow these people, and the observer typically would be taking notes, and then he would radio down, okay, that's your car right there. The trooper would pull out, get behind it, and then they'd pull them over, and there you go. So what people don't realize, we weren't looking for this guy's going 8 miles over the speed limit. Mostly we were looking for the aggressive driver, the one that was changing lanes, riding on people's rear end.
Okay, so does that make sense?
It does. And it makes me really happy to know that it's not just about catching speeders, but it's about finding the aggressive drivers, the people who are really making it unsafe for the other people on the road. That brings me the peace of mind to know that that's the purpose of patrolling by air.
Okay, so the Oregon State Police doesn't patrol speeders by air anymore because of budget cuts, but instead they use the planes to enforce wildlife laws. So when Andrew's flying, he's now mainly looking for illegal hunters. We also looked into it around the country, and we found out that most law enforcement agencies don't have planes at all. So given all that, what are the chances you're being watched by an airplane when you're on the road?
Well, in Oregon, pretty much zero. And even, you know, with one traffic plane, the state of Oregon, you know, it's 250 miles by 300 miles and you have one plane. So, you know, you figure it out.
Yeah. It seems safe to say that nationwide, if you see the sign, it's possible, but unlikely
yeah.
that someone is flying over you at that moment.
You know what I tell people, whether it's an airplane or not, just don't be the one leading. You know, you don't want to be the one, yay, I'm ahead. You know, don't stand out, blend in.
Oh, that's hard because I'm the type of person who, if I see a car in front of me, I think, man, I just want to get in front of that person. And then once I'm in front, I'm fine.
Will, but it never ends.
I know. It's terrible. It's a bad habit. But I do try hard not to tailgate or make aggressive moves. I just like to be in front. That's all.
I think that's a pretty normal human trait. But yeah, just tone it down, be smart, you know, go with the flow.
That is good advice. Go with the flow. The listener hotline is always open. Maybe there's something you think about during long drives. Give us a call, 347-464-9626. We may just call you back with a surprise.
Every Little Thing was made by Flora Lichtman, Catherine Wells, Christine Driscoll, Phoebe Flanagan, and Devin Taylor, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Drive safe, and don't be like, "Yay, I'm ahead." Goodbye.